This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 485, recorded on Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. My name is Martin Spriggs, and your regular host, along with my co-host, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome. Today's my mother-in-law's birthday, so a special shout-out to Judy Draper. We had a little party this weekend. I have a funny story to share.
Okay.
She's just a real fun person, and oftentimes we end up trading these cards that sing or do fabulous things that you can buy these days, greeting cards. And I went into the greeting card section looking for her a greeting card. She doesn't like the fact that she's 76 today. And the first thing that I saw was happy 16th. You know, they have them for three-year-olds and five-year-olds. It was a 16 card, but the one looked kind of like a seven. It had a little tail at the top. And so we bought her a happy 16th card. And I thought I could just say, you know, it looked like you turned 16. And I didn't blow out the candle to see that it played music, and it actually sang a song that said happy 16th birthday. So today we're celebrating her 16th birthday. She is young again. So
60th anniversary of her 16th.
There you go. Birthday, yeah. Fun day.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Draper.
Yeah.
And she's right there close to you guys. That's kind of nice to be able to do that. Not everybody has that that luxury.
Super cool. That's right. She's about an hour away, and we enjoyed the MLC spring play together on Sunday afternoon. They did Mousetrap. It was a lot of fun.
It is the season. Awesome. It's also the season for us, the one show a month that we devote almost wholly to going through all of our community feedback. And we've got quite a long list to make our way through. And that's one of the neat parts about this show is we take listener feedback, viewer feedback, and we put it all together, and we kind of learn. And
kind of
that the last couple of days is kind of reading through all of the good stuff that was sent our way. So that's another perk, I think, as a part of what we do here. So where would you like to start, Sally, with our community feedback show?
Well, oddly enough and randomly enough, we can start with Digo, and the person who put something on Digo was yours truly. So I'll start with something that I added to the community feedback batch, and that was just pointing out that Logos does have a free Bible study software available now. So Logos, for me, means another level of Bible study. It's definitely the tool that's used by many of our pastors who do digital Bible study, because it is taught and used at the seminary during their training years at SEM. And it's always been something that's had a pretty large price tag, and for good reason. It's a great piece of software. There's all kinds of magic you can do with it. I'm not the right person to explain it, but now they are making a basic version of their software free. And so even if you just want to use it for studying different versions of the Bible, you definitely could get those for free. One of the powerful things is that many books are available to be integrated with your digital study. And NPH, in fact, makes many of their books available for study within the Logos software. And, of course, those books are not going to be free. But you can get started. You can get the mobile app. You can log in and use it from any of your devices with the Logos 7 Basic for free. So just wanted to make sure everyone was aware.
Cool. Sally, do you know if you can use that version and buy some of these reference works like NPH's resources, or do you have to go up with a more fuller version of Logos itself to buy some of these extra resources?
Says the base package includes vast collections of trusted biblical resources tagged to work seamlessly, and over 100,000 books available in Logos format. So it sounds like you can buy books and integrate them there.
Okay, awesome.
So, yeah, nice. Good stuff.
All right.
Next up, we should look at Pinterest.
Networks, yes.
And over on Pinterest, there were several interesting infographic type things posted on our Wells Tech board. One titled Social Media Cheat Sheet. So we recently talked about Facebook and the different photo dimensions that are popular for Facebook posts. This cheat sheet actually lists Facebook, Twitter, Google+, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, and YouTube. So if you're looking to know what size, this is a great little thing to pin on your own Pinterest board, or just head over to the Wells Tech board to check it out.
Yeah, one of the amazing things about that list is that it's not just one or two different image sizes per social network. There's a half dozen, in some cases a dozen different places you can put imagery. And we talk over and over on this show about the importance of using imagery. And so don't let these social networks just kind of plug in their own image or the default image. Take advantage of these. And Sally, you'd probably recommend a tool to get those images in the right sizes.
I would. And I'm grinning a pic. Wait, I got to stop sharing my screen. Hang on. I'm getting there. You have to see my smile because I'm grinning a big old monkey grin. For a shout out to PicMonkey, which is a great website, picmonkey.com, for easily sizing images. Very intuitive and fun to use. Makes you grin big monkey grins. So.
And it would make your social networks look even better. So take That's a look correct. At that infographic for one, but then get busy resizing those images.
All right. Next up, there's an infographic titled 116 Visual Content and Visual Marketing Ideas for Your Biz. So obviously, this would apply for your church and school as well. If you're looking to use more imagery, these are different ways that you can do that. You can create shareable images. They suggest affirmation type images, reminder images, headline images, teaser images, perhaps a note about or an introduction to your sermon with an image, your upcoming sermon series or whatever it may be. You can create brand images. You can create PDFs, so ebooks and things related to your church and school work. They have example ideas for videos, Q&A videos, graphic recording, webcast recording. That's kind of what we do, isn't it, Martin? Just lots of different ideas for visual marketing. And as we often say, definitely communication tool of choice in the year 2017 in the digital age that we live in. And then I was shocked beyond belief to know that Martin Spriggs actually added a pin on our Pinterest board.
Oh, it's mine.
This one came from you, Martin. It's called 20 Best Social Media Tools for 2017 from the 20 Most Influential Church Communicators Online.
Yeah, this was kind of cool. I guess I couldn't help myself because it's been drilled into me that infographics make good Pinterest posts. So I was probably just in awe of myself that I finally got it onto the Pinterest page that I forgot that I actually did it. But there's all kinds of tips here from people who are in the business of using social networks and the tools that they use. And we've talked about a number of these, but a number of them I had no idea existed. And some of them are very niche. Some of them seem really super useful. And, you know, we're talking about things like Hootsuite and Slack and, you know, but there's a bunch of different tools that may really hit a sore spot for you if you are in charge of your social networks or your social media posting, which can get a little onerous. It's a good idea to examine what tools are out there. And these guys have kind of taking a look at what's out there and offered what makes their life a lot easier. So it's probably worth the time and energy to go through that infographic.
Yeah, I definitely want to check some of these new ones out because there's definitely things here I haven't heard of, like Q and Blinkist and Autopilot.
The one that struck me was Rev, and I don't have it in front of me. What is the description there for that one?
It says it will transcribe your recorded voice into a Word doc from the app. Write a blog post while walking your dog. It's that easy.
Look at that. I was curious how well that would work, but he seems to live by it. So awesome.
Yeah. All right. We had a few comments on our blog post. This one actually goes back to wearable technology discussion we had and talk about Google Cardboard in the classroom. And not long after that, Leslie Bergerman shared with us that a WSCO classroom was using virtual reality and Google Expeditions. It's in Mr. Isles' World History class, and they visited ancient Egyptian pyramids, saw the top of Mount Everest, and swam in the depths of the ocean. So it says we get to experience things as if we were there rather than just looking at pictures in a book. So I bet that would be Peter Isles who teaches at WSCO. I'm not sure.
I was wondering. Yeah, I bet that is. I didn't realize he was at Wisconsin Lutheran High School there in Milwaukee. So,
yeah, pretty neat to see technology in our Wells classrooms. We also heard from someone in response to the fact that I posted, I think this was actually in connection with our Wells Tech photo contest that we had in our album over on Flickr, and I wrote a post about that as a ministry resource, and Pam Krieger asked if there were any images of the Great Exchange available, and you know, I had to answer, I don't believe we have anything like that in the Wells Tech Photo Challenge album, and you know, I was always taught to use stick men to represent the Great Exchange, but maybe that's a challenge for some of our listeners that are graphically skilled to develop something like that.
Cool.
Be great.
Yeah, that's a challenge right there. So, all right.
And let's see. We also had a little feedback on my ministry resource from last week, which is when I shared free Bible images and just a walkthrough of how to use their website and what kind of things you would find over at freebibleimages.org. And I tweeted about it and shared it in different ways. And they actually came and commented on my post and retweeted the tweet that we made as well. Free Bible Images says, this is a great video about Free Bible Images website. Well done, guys. So, there you go. I'm endorsed by the creators of Free Bible Images. So that was exciting to get their feedback.
Well done, gal, in this case.
There you go.
Nice job, Sally.
All right. So that's the main comments on the website that I saw. Next up, we actually had some email and a voicemail, both.
Yay for voicemail. Awesome.
Yeah. So I don't actually have the exact copy of the email. It was from Robert Murphy, who's in Norman, Oklahoma, and he was asking about church directory recommendations. And then we also heard via voicemail from Marianne Witter, who's at Fount of Life in Colorado Springs. Maybe Martin can play her voicemail.
This is Marianne Witter, and I'm from Fount of Life at Colorado Springs, Colorado. My question is, do you have a template for church picture address directories for each individual church use? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marianne, for the voicemail. So what do we say, Sally? What advice do we have for those people looking for pictorial church directory templates?
Actually, my advice is pretty limited. I haven't done a project like that manually from scratch myself, and I'm not really familiar with anyone that has. The church picture directories I've participated in have been done by the company LifeTouch. And I think I've done it at 3 or 4 different churches where LifeTouch has come in and taken the pictures and you organize your members into time slots. The most recent experience here at St. Paul's, they had everything on the computer. You signed up there and you did all your ordering and things like that through their website. So it was pretty painless to do. And they give you a free 8x10 for coming in and getting your picture made, and very professional directories as a result. I'm sure, you know, there's the side to it that they also are willing to sell you some pictures and things. And maybe people want to avoid that. But I think besides that, it's pretty painless for a church to engage LifeTouch to do that service.
It's been my experience too that most of the church management software solutions have something like this. I know Shepherd Staff allows you to upload or include photos. Mm-hmm. I think their online version does too. And then it will spit out a photo church directory. It's not going to be, you know, of professional quality. You're going to have to print it out on a, you know, an inkjet or your color laser, whatever, color copier. But that's one way to, that's maybe the easiest way to keep things up to date. The online version, I think, allows members even to log in and upload, you know, their own photos. So you always have that option. I think almost all of them, all of the mainstream church management software solutions, CMSs, as we call them, offer some kind of facility like that. So I don't know if that's exactly what you're after, but that's maybe a place to look as well if your church uses one of those kinds of things.
Great idea, Martin. So hopefully that's a help to Robert and Mary Ann.
And thank you very much for the question, though. Yeah. If anybody else out there listening or watching has ideas, please share those as well, and we'll share those at an opportune time.
All right. Next up, we checked out our friends over on Google Plus. Google Plus is a great website for communities, and there's a real thriving Wells Google Schools community on Google Plus, where different people involved in supporting Chromebooks and the use of Google G Suite for education ask questions and share ideas and relevant content and things. And several of them have shared different articles about G Suite's capabilities, including this one from Rachel Pearson, where you can now insert videos from Google Drive into Google Slides. So
kind of a shocker to me
that you couldn't do it before. You mean?
Yeah,
their focus was YouTube videos,
right?
But people do upload videos to Google Drive for storage purposes, and it's nice now to be able to access those and use them in your Google Slides.
And I suppose there's maybe it enables you to keep things a little bit more private too. YouTube was a little bit more challenging to keep the video private itself. Here you can kind of use a closed system like G Suite and not have to have these videos floating all over the internet.
True. A couple of mentions from Professor James Karlofsky at Martin Luther College. One that I thought was really interesting, how to organize pages in the new Google Sites. I've recently been playing with the new Google Sites, and let me tell you, it's a whole lot different than the old Google Sites. And so it's nice to have a little bit of quick and easy instruction on working with pages. Covers adding pages, deleting pages, hiding and nesting pages, and reordering. And they have a nice little video to go along with it. This is from our friends at Better Cloud Monitor. They are now the owners of what used to be the Google Guru, and they produce some really great content around the G Suite tools.
Gotcha. So I was thinking this is a brand new site and something I wanted to subscribe to. It looked like they had great content. So
yeah, definitely. And I do subscribe to them, and they send out daily newsletters and a weekly compilation newsletter, and always a section dedicated just to Google tools. So,
yeah, so it's not just Google, it's any cloud service, but it sounds like they spend some good screen time with the Google product.
Yeah,
makes sense.
Definitely. From Drew Willems, we found this article, A New Generation of Chromebooks Designed for Millions of Students and Educators. So it seems that Google or G Suite for Education is really hitting its stride. And as they move forward, the computer companies are developing better and better Chromebooks, that sweet little device that'll access the web and be an easy and fast tool for students to use. So some of the things that are coming in the future generations of Chromebooks being announced currently, stylus capability, and specifically for like note taking and drawing and math, doing your math right there on the screen. They're talking about adding world-facing cameras. So just like your smartphones that have cameras that you can take pictures of other people or video of other people, adding that capability to Chromebooks, and USB-C charging so that it's faster and allows for multiple charges and things like that. They're also touting the Android apps being on Chromebooks and how much that opens up the capabilities by having all those different Android apps accessible from Chromebooks. And specifically, Adobe has released a suite of Adobe Android apps optimized for Chromebooks. So their Creative Cloud with all their different tools optimized for use on the Chromebook. And just all kinds of creative apps, Wii Video, Soundtrap, Explain Everything, lots of great apps available there. And they also make mention of Google Classroom and how it's now optimized for display in the Android app. You can do things in the Android app that aren't nearly as easy to do, especially with that stylus edition and things like that. Google Classroom is going to have more and more capabilities. So seeing lots of great growth in the G Suite for education realm with these powerful Chromebooks that are becoming available.
I think it's almost game over as far as who wins the classroom between iPads and others versus, you know, the Chromebook revolution. You hear less and less about anything other than a Chromebook that's sitting on student desks. One of your sons has a Chromebook, right, still?
Yeah, a couple of them actually use Chromebooks every day at college, both college students now. One of them has the flip that'll turn all the way around backwards and act like a tablet, and they're both touch screens and just really powerful little devices. And they love the price tag, you know, very affordable, and you're not going to have a heartbreak if something happens to it. So all good.
Good.
For sure.
All right. Any more Google Schools news?
I thought I'd mention that there was a conversation, and we'll include some links in the show notes, where Allison, I don't know who Allison is exactly, but she's a Wells Google Schools participant, and she asked about online gradebooks, and I thought it was really interesting. And she got 8 or 10 responses, and just about every one of them is using different gradebook software. So it's kind of all over the place, and I'll look up these links and make sure and include them. But some that were mentioned, let's see, I wrote them down here: TeacherEase, OpenSys, SchoolSpeak, Schoology, GradeLink, and ThinkWave. And also InGrade was mentioned as well. It started out being a free tool, but now is a pay-for tool. So there's just a whole bunch of them in this space, apparently. And so maybe one of those will hit the sweet spot for someone listening today.
Yeah, Allison was specifically interested in those that provided digital parent access or parent sharing. And some of those do that better than others. So interesting.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, from Facebook land, there's another group over there that's pretty active called Wells Intersections. And Pastor James Aderman shared 5 ways to send better church newsletters. This is from a website called Pro Church Tools. And they're just talking about different things to be aware of as you're sending church newsletters. And one thing they say is send your church newsletter from an individual person. So it's, you know, written to someone. Don't have a different person write your email newsletter every week. It'll lose continuity and things like that. Send it at the same time every week. I know in our former congregation, they would time it for Saturday mornings because oftentimes it had the announcements that were going to be in the bulletin on Sunday, and people just enjoyed getting it a little bit early, and that was good timing for people to open and things like that. Send your church newsletter with exclusive details. Gives your church a reason to subscribe to the emails. Write subject lines that are impossible to ignore. Include a little mystery in it, and then use data to drive your content decisions. So find out what people are opening and things like that to help you decide what to include in your church newsletter.
And most of the newsletter tools these days, like MailChimp, make that super easy to do, so you can get good analytics about who's opening them, even what time of day they're opening them, which links they're clicking on. All kinds of good statistics that will help you refine maybe what you send out and when you send it out.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really cheap, and in fact, in many cases for our churches, free resources and tools to use. So nice find.
Yeah. We flew on over to Twitter, and Martin, apparently you've been tweeting some lately about a mesh network.
I just retweeted an article I found on mesh networks. Again, I think we talk to this. Should I share my screen? Let me do that. Count on you for all this stuff, Sally. And then I just kind of go nuts.
I hit overload with my tabs. Sorry, I let you down.
That's okay. I got it right here.
Mesh networks are a new kind of Wi-Fi, as I understand it, being able to kind of layer different access points or something to that effect.
Yeah, as we described it before, the ability to have more than one Wi-Fi router, not just an extension, but the ability to kind of crisscross across the entire area that you want to coverage for. And they kind of rate the top ones here. And the one that came out on top was actually from a company we've recommended before, and Sally, you have experience with, and that's Ubiquiti. Mm-hmm. Ubiquiti has a consumer-grade mesh network solution called Amplify HD. And Amplify HD is this, looks like a little cube. They like it because of its speed, but also its coverage. It offers the greatest coverage of all of the ones that they reviewed. Kind of in second place was, what was it? Something I had never heard of before, Plume. They like that because it's just dead simple. So somebody who's maybe not comfortable with that kind of technology can set this up pretty easily. And then the honorable mention was the one that I have at home, Netgear Orbi. They don't like it because it's, I mean, they only give it honorable mention because it doesn't give quite as much range, but that depends on what kind of house you're covering. And for mine, it's more than sufficient, and it is actually very fast. They give it a ding for being a little bit more expensive, but sometimes you get what you pay for. So take a look at that article. It's got a lot of good pieces of rationale is what to look for when you're looking at these mesh networks. Another one that is very popular that you'll see in Best Buy or whatever is Eero. That gets a lot of press these days as well. So, but that is, they claim all of these, and I guess I believe it, are better than that kind of standalone multi-antenna monster that's sitting someplace on the coffee table, wherever it is in your house. It's struggling to reach to the bedroom or the basement, whatever it is. So,
all right. Also on Twitter, as a follow-up to, I think it was my ministry resource again.
Yes,
wow.
Jeopardy.
I got all kinds of follow-up. I had written about Jeopardy Labs as a tool teachers could use to create a Jeopardy game. Teachers or anyone who wanted to create a Jeopardy game for different events or classroom review or whatever the case may be. Rachel Pearson replied that she was checking out Flip Quiz and had heard a lot of good things about it. Flipquiz.me. We're all yearning for student engagement. Flip Quiz is a free classroom review game for educators. You don't need to be a one-to-one tablet school to get students involved. So maybe you want to check that out as well, something new to engage your students in. It looks like a Jeopardy-style game. I see some blocks and things. So, yeah, check it out. Maybe Rachel can tell us more about it. We should make mention that Wells Tech has a Google group, which is like a group that you can, a group of talented church techies who enjoy helping other people, and you
talented
can ask questions.
And yes.
Definitely. And over on the Google groups recently, there was a discussion about HymnSoft and some of the challenges as one of the tools, QuickTime, I believe, is no longer being used.
Right, there's some .NET stuff required as well. So as HymnSoft doesn't get updated and operating systems do, Windows 7 to Windows 8 to Windows 10, it's become a known challenge to get HymnSoft installed on a more modern computer. So the question was, well, what options do I have to get this installed, or if it is installed, to not have it crash? And our good friend Ryan Rosenthal did offer a response that he found a way and an article that helped him download QuickTime, get that set up, and HymnSoft did install. He said, you have to wait absurdly long in between verses or it freezes, but otherwise it works. So it probably depends on your use case, whether that's a viable solution or not. So,
all right. Yeah, make sure you join that Google group and share your insight and questions as well. And then finally, just a couple of blogs articles that I tagged. I'll just make mention of one of them here. Both are from the excellent blog Church Tech Today. We've had Lauren Hunter, the creator of Church Tech Today, on our website, on our webcast in the past. We've interviewed her. This particular article that I tagged was Three Reasons Your Church Needs a Communication Person. And I thought that was pretty timely and something that I guess many congregations don't consider. Maybe they heap that on the church secretary or whatever it is, but here are three different things. You need someone to collect information, you need someone to function as quality control, and you need someone to schedule communication. So just as we were talking about having great church e-newsletters and things like that, this plays right into that conversation and something that job descriptions in the church office probably need to include in the scope. So good food for thought from Church Tech Today, as is many of their articles. So be sure to check out the blog at churchtechtoday.com.
Very good. Sally, I think we should run fast forward here. I've got to be done in about 25 minutes and we have a long way to go here. So let's skip our news and tech for this week. That'll save. We do want to make mention of the some Martin, choir tours that are coming up.
Maybe before that, we would just mention that we have a great interview to include with Pastor James Hine.
That would be an excellent idea. We took the time to actually talk to Pastor James Hine. He was up in your neck of the woods a month or so ago talking about evangelism, and not just any evangelism, but how to reach out with the gospel to millennials. Happy to have with us James Hine, Pastor James Hine from St. Marcus Lutheran in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us, James. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Martin.
First of all, maybe introduce yourself a little bit to our audience, you know, name, rank, serial number kind of stuff, hobbies, what you do there at St. Marcus, et cetera. Give us a little insight into who James Hine is.
Yeah, St. Marcus here in Milwaukee is a fairly large church with a very large school. My role is as lead pastor, which means I handle a lot of the like day-to-day operational stuff as well as the long-term vision and strategic planning for things, and in addition to all the other general pastoral duties of preaching, teaching, counseling stuff. Hobbies? I'm married 10 years. That's not a hobby. Committed to that. Married 10 years, no kids, lots of pets. But with the free time that I do have, most of the life is a lot of work. But free time that I do have, I've always been an avid movie fan. So movies are a huge thing in my life, as well as just kind of general staying on top of pop culture stuff. And I've done a decent amount of like blogging and online ministry stuff.
How long have you been at St. Marcus?
Just under a year now.
And you came from where?
I came from Resurrection Life in Rochester, Minnesota, which was a different kind of community. Rochester, Minnesota is kind of dominated by the Mayo Clinic landscape, kind of upper middle class healthcare. Moving more into the heart of Milwaukee is a vastly different ministry, just in the sense of diversity and stuff like that.
Certainly an urban ministry for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're excited to talk to you today, Pastor. I heard a little bit about a recent visit you made to my neck of the woods. I'm over here in New Ulm, Minnesota, have a student at MLC, and I understand you were one of the speakers at Evangelism Day, and your focus, I think, was on millennials. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about why you're interested in millennials. What's up with that age category?
And what is a millennial, maybe first? That's probably the best question.
Yeah, millennials are, it depends on which researcher you look at, but millennials generally are pegged in the born between 1980 and 2000 category, and which means that I'm at the very top end of millennials. I was born in 81, And the bottom end of the millennial generation is now just entering into independent adulthood, you know, at 17, 18 years old. It's going to be, this is the most, generations ago, there was very little generational study. Like they weren't every 20 years, how is this generation different from the next? You hear a ton of it today. It's generally driven by marketing agencies because they want to see who's consuming what and what is our largest consumer demographic and who's the most influential in society. Millennials will now are now the largest adult population and demographic in the U.S., which means they're important for shifting the overall majority and influence. They're also the obviously then the biggest consumers. And it's a fascination of mine. Ever since a couple years ago, I was asked to write a paper and do some research on ministering to millennials. And they are just philosophically an ideology of very, very different generation from prior generations.
So what's been your experience with millennials in ministry situations? You've got a number of years in ministry now in a congregation and now in a school setting. Why the interest? How has it impacted your ministry?
It's impacted my ministry in the sense that in my prior setting, one of my big tasks was to try to recruit in millennials for a congregation that is perhaps aging, which a lot of congregations are facing. There's very little cultural pressure to be in worship anymore or to be engaged in a church. Whereas, you know, 50 years ago, that was almost unthinkable. Same thing with like lifestyle trends and marriage and cohabiting before marriage. Very few people did it in the 60s. Almost everyone does it today, in part because there's no social pressure. There's no cultural force moving people that way. The same way, there's no cultural force moving people into churches today. And so you have to just get better at saying intentionally, how do we involve and train and disciple young adults? So that's kind of what I was working towards in my last congregation. We had a good deal of success in doing that. The congregation I've come into is fascinating in that despite being 142 years old, by a significant margin, 25 to 34 and 35 to 44 are our absolutely largest demographic categories. And so here it's more kind of like how do you just not necessarily just recruit them, but how do you disciple them and train them as leaders? What happens when the majority of the leaders in your congregation are, you know, 30 to 35 years old? So it's an interesting, you know, different kind of change, but it's actually also kind of unusual for a church of 142 years old to have that sort of demographic. So
I suppose sure. That's driven by the size of the school too, because school parents are probably right in that age bracket, right?
It's partially some of that. I would say a bigger factor is the fact that it's so urban. So okay. Millennials are... It goes back to a little bit of the, you know, the 90s glamour of Seinfeld and Friends and adults living these fast-paced single lifestyles in the city. And prior to that, it was you worked in the city and moved out in the suburbs, and the American dream was to kind of get the white picket fence in your nice spot right out in the burbs. Millennials are absolutely moving back into cities for a variety of different reasons, urban ministry becomes that much more important for reaching young adults. And the fact that we are like, we're right on North Avenue in Milwaukee, and that location, I think, lends to a lot of young adults.
Okay. So let's translate that, not just a generic ministry, but in specifically sharing the gospel. Is there a different approach? Is it a different conversation? Millennials versus, let's say, baby boomers or anybody else? I mean, what do we need to understand about how they think and react when we share the gospel, when we talk about Jesus to them?
Yeah. Okay. So the single largest factor from my perspective and from my research is the fact that millennials are significantly more likely to be born into non-intact parental units, non-married and just not together parental units. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're eight, if somebody born in the millennial generation is 8 times more likely to be born to non-wed or non-together parents than somebody just 40 years ago. And what that does is, if the Bible is accurate when it says that that's your God-given parental unit, you know, just kind of simple fourth commandment stuff, your God-given authorities, spiritual and physical, are your parental unit, mom and dad. And then you grow up, and you still have authority structure. You still have your governing authorities are your government, your police, your local officials, and your national officials, and your spiritual authorities are your church. Well, what happens if from 0 to 18 your naturally God-given intended parental unit sort of fails you in some way? Well, you grow up and you're much less likely to trust your other authorities. So millennials are opting out of politics and they're opting out of organized church because they see those as traditional authority structures that have sort of failed them in the past. And so you have to kind of regain a trust that wasn't there before. And I don't think that can come just in the Sunday morning experience. It has to be a more relational kind of ministry. You have to have, there's no church that I'm aware of that regularly has more than 600 attenders in the United States that doesn't have some kind of robust small groups ministry. So you have to get, in other words, you can't just have a Sunday morning pastor speaks to congregation right. back and forth and expect that that's going to work, because they're not getting any of the side-to-side interrelational ministry during the week that people got in the past. So you have to be very intentional about relational ministries. Millennials are just as relational as anybody else. They just tend to do their relationships a little differently, obviously leveraging digital means to do so. But, you know, gospel ministry doesn't change. It's always law and gospel. But it's what is the kind of immediate deficits or in needs of a generation. And there's, I think, is intact relational, you know, building good, solid, healthy Christian relationships, because they didn't see as much of it.
And obviously relationships happen face to face. I'm wondering if technology augments that effort to build those relationships. We are technology and ministry podcast. Just curious if there are certain social networks or ways that are effective in reaching out to millennials to build those relationships.
Yeah. So I don't think that any technology is inherently you know, some people have strong opinions about the technology. I think if there's a resource there, you have to use it. And I don't see the internet and social networking as any different from a printing press at the time of the Reformation. You know, like, God gives you technology, and technology can either be used to destroy things and, you know, take away glory from God, or to glorify God. And, you know, how would I use media today? I honestly think digital communications is going to absolutely change the church in the next 20, 30 years. I do not think, I could be completely wrong on this, but if I'm right, then you heard it here first. That 20 or 30 years from now, what you're going to end up seeing is small pockets of groups networked together by digital platforms, something along the lines of a Google Hangout, Skype sessions, FaceTime. And you're going to meet perhaps just in homes, but smaller venues. Boomers were a builder generation in bigger structures and more massive whatever, which is inherently less relational. It's easy to get lost in a sanctuary of 1,000 people. And I think you're going to see less and less of that. It's not pragmatic when it comes to a like cost-effective standpoint. It's not interrelational, and I think we're going to leverage technology to do that better. And anybody who still thinks of that kind of older platform is not recognizing just millennial thought process.
Very interesting. I guess as I look at ministry and now in technology, I see that happening in little bits and pieces, especially within technology companies themselves, where there's this constant virtual gathering kind of concept where they're always in a chat room, or they've got Google Hangouts running all day, and they just, you know, the camera's always on, and they're just kind of a virtual conversation away from getting stuff done. As you kind of talk through maybe that, what things might look like in 20, 30 years, and maybe not even that long, maybe there is that understanding that, hey, those people that I want to relate to are just as far as a foot away on the other side of a screen. That conversation continues, not just in that formal structured way, but just kind of in a casual, ongoing way. That's a very interesting concept that I'm sure we're going to see more of in kind of the consumer world as well. Very interesting.
I think for honestly for pastors too. Every time I give, like, so I've gone throughout the Wells world and done a lot of presentations on millennials at this point, and probably most of the districts in the Wells. And every time I'll fly out there, take, you know, 3-4 days out of my calendar to do it,
right?
Stand in front of a large screen doing PowerPoint and say, I'm willing to do this because I think it's worthwhile. But just so you know, this is enormously inefficient and enormously expensive. I can be talking to you on this screen that's right next to me that I'm presenting off of, and I could be doing this within this. It would have taken me 3 hours as opposed to 3 days in order to do it, and it, you know, $1,000 less.
Right.
So, right. You know, I think when for a lot of times the congregations think, oh yeah, we need to drive forward into technology because young people like technology, and you should. No, don't do it because young people like technology. Use it. Young people recognize technology is just better and more efficient a lot of the time. It just makes sense. It's a God-given tool. It's the difference, again, it's the difference between a hand-scribed Bible and a printing press Bible. It just makes good sense. And so use it because it's a gift from God. And so I think, furthermore, the efficiency thing, visitation ministry. I can't go to counseling. I can't go to a hospital here in Milwaukee and visit somebody for 15 minutes and get back to my other stuff in less than an hour and a half. On the other hand, if the person was comfortable with talking to me on the phone, like visually on a FaceTime chat, that would be a 15, 20 minute visit. You know, it's the amount of efficiency that it can free up, I think, are things that within a couple of years, everybody's just kind of got to get comfortable with, and I think largely we will.
Not only efficient, but you could probably even spend more meaningful time, you know, in that in that conversation, right? So if people are kind of interested in this, and I know that all of our churches really should be, because they have a large demographic that falls into this millennial category. Where would you advise that they look for more information, especially about maybe some resources that they could dig in a little bit more with to figure out what's going on and how to minister in this world?
Yeah. The best generational
other than
research.
Call you.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, yeah. I don't know if there's a shameless plug in here or not for, which, by the way, I started my blog about 7 years ago after you had come to Resurrection Life in Rochester and we're talking about different tech things.
Right.
And one of the things was blogging. At that point, we became a multi-site ministry, but at that point, we were only one site, and I was up preaching no more than once every 3 weeks. And I felt like I wanted more of a creative outlet than that.
Right.
And so you would mention blogging at the time. I took that outlet, ran with it, and still doing it. I haven't had as much time since I've been here, but it's been like a several thousand, like the thought, several thousand subscribers to the fact that it's, you know, at some point in time it hit me that, you know, I'm writing weekly to a group of people that is 10 times to 20 times larger than what I'm preaching to on a Sunday morning. And it's just seemed insane not to use that kind of medium. So yes, if you do go to my blog site, pastorjameshine.wordpress.com, and you just search millennials, I have written several series and some papers on stuff like this. But as far as like the best research out there, David Kinnaman and Gabe Lyons have written several really good books. One of them's called Unchristian. One of them's called You Lost Me. One of them's called Good Faith. and a couple other materials. These are guys who have sort of taken over the Barna research group.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, theologically you don't agree with all of their stuff. I actually probably am much more comfortable with some of Kinnaman's assertions than his predecessor, George Barna. I think he's a little bit more on point. But those are the best resources. If you want a good feel for where are we today, what are the generational differences, what are things they respond to, what are particular sensitivities and touch points. Like, every generation has certain things that they're highly hypersensitive to. It doesn't talk a whole lot about tech, but it's really good generational research.
Interesting. Before I let you go, I probably should have queued this question up earlier. What was the reaction or reception like at MLC where you're talking to that specific age group?
Yeah, it's funny. I think a lot of it's resonated. I think, to be perfectly honest, I think some of what I'm saying comes across as a little bit out there to, like, the idea. There aren't a whole lot of Wells people I know that are really comfortable even entertaining the thought that 20 years from now we might be meeting in pods of 20 people who are digitally connected, networked to a larger group of another 20 networks, and saying that's something like a church.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of out there for a lot of our thinking, and I get that. But I think, you know, kind of casting a little bit of that, just the possibilities of it and the creativity of it, it seems like young adults are significantly more receptive to it because they've lived their whole lives virtually, right, you know, online. It's funny when I go around and do presentations amongst ministers where those who are like 40 and under look at me and they're like, yeah, I think there's a couple, you know, really worthwhile, valid points. And sometimes guys who are 50 and older look at me like, this guy's nuts. You know, where's he coming from on, you know, and I get it, but even that tells me some of the generational difference.
Right.
So,
yep. And,
I thought they were very, receptive, and a lot of them followed up in, with questions, emails, and found me on Facebook and wanted to learn a little bit more about some stuff.
Wonderful. Cause that's the world they're going to minister in. So
right.
You got to get it straight. Yeah. James, really appreciate you taking the time with us, and thanks for the ministry that you do there at St. Mark's and the work you're doing in this particular area. Blessings on that work.
Thanks. No, I appreciate the opportunity. It was fun. I'd love to talk more sometime.
Awesome. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thank you, Pastor Hine. Appreciate your time. Blessings on your work. That's I think that's something, Sally, that churches really need to be strategic about, and recognize that there are different kinds of ways that need to be different kinds of communication tools that could be used, and different kinds of techniques that need to be used to reach out to all of the people you want to share the gospel with.
Definitely. I loved his perspective. You know, God gives it to us as a gift, and we should definitely make use of the tools we have available to us. So great stuff.
Now tell us about college tours coming up, college choir tours.
The MLC College Choir will be traveling in a week or so, actually end of this week, heading to Texas. So performing at different venues around Texas during their spring break. They're going from Dallas down to the Gulf Coast in the Houston area, through San Antonio and back up through Texas and out to West Texas and New Mexico even. If you can't catch them at one of those locations, then be sure to tune into the live stream from Martin Luther College as they sing their choir tour program on Sunday, March 19th at 3 p.m. Central. So always an excellent concert.
Very nice. All right. I think we've reached the point in the show where we take a pick of the week and explain why we think that's worth sharing.
And my pick of the week this week is from PC Mag. And they did an article, a slideshow actually recently, 17 Tricks to Master Google Photos. We've talked about Google Photos in the past, Martin. I think maybe it was one of your picks of the week, not that long ago. But these 17 tricks held some new things for me and things that I thought our audience might find valuable. I just want to make mention of just a few of them. One is that you can go into settings and turn off location sharing. So as your pictures are being taken these days, there's a lot of geolocation data saved with the photos. And perhaps you don't want to share exactly where you were when you took certain pictures. So if you flip the switch in settings, and you can read the article to find out how, when you share via a link, those geolocations won't come along for the ride. So just a little security precaution there. Next up, I have that you can convert images already uploaded to save space. So the deal is, with Google Photos, if you're willing to notch back to a 16-pixel max dimensions of your image, you can store those for free. Unlimited storage of high-quality images, they call it, and that's 16 megapixels. And it may be that you've uploaded some that are larger than that, and you don't even necessarily realize that they're just kind of intermixed with your photos and you didn't have that setting turned on or whatever it is. Well, there is a place in settings where you can recover your storage, move those back to the high quality that they call it, that is free. And so check that out if you have some of those you want to kind of ratchet back. And then finally, I just had to include this one because I love this video, but it's encouraging you to back up with Wi-Fi only. So if you don't want to eat up your data plan, you know, only do the backups to Google Photos over Wi-Fi when you're connected to Wi-Fi. And the sentence that got me was, otherwise, the auto-update aspect of Google Photos can eat through your data like water dissolving cotton candy. And they had a video to support that. So you got to watch this 6-second video. This is a raccoon accidentally dissolving his cotton candy and into the water, and it's gone. And he's like, whoa, what happened to my cotton candy? So perfect illustration. Just had to share that because I know folks on Wells Tech would love that. So that's what I got for you this week.
All right. My pick of the week is a blog post. It has some value specifically to you iPhone and iPad users. I think a lot of people are beginning to spend a lot more time on their mobile devices, whether it's an iPhone or iPad or Android tablet or Android phone, whatever. One of the things that you kind of missed out on in many respects is the ability to take content from the device and be able to print it. Fortunately, a lot of printers today now support something called AirPrint. And this article talks about how to take advantage of AirPrint, use AirPrint using the sharing sheet that is built into the iOS operating system. It's actually very easy to use. If you have an AirPrint printer or capable printer on your network, all you have to do is find the piece of content that you want to print, open up the sharing sheet, click the print icon, and then you simply search for the printers, available printers on your network, and they will show up, and you select them, and then you simply print. You don't have a lot of print controls. You can print black and white. You can change the number of copies. I think it depends on the printer as well. But it works just like anything else. I've done this at home. So if you're out shopping for a new printer, and printers are actually very cheap. Sometimes they're cheaper than the ink to replenish your old printer. You may want to just make sure that it has, if you have an iPhone or iPad, AirPrint capabilities. Android has something similar, so you may want to look into that. They also talk here about printing with a non-AirPrint printer. There's some software that you can get on your network and or print through a computer that way. So there's lots of different ways to do that. But gone are the days where just because you wanted to use an iPad or iPhone for your day-to-day or homework, you had to give up the ability to print. Now you can print that stuff as well. And there are occasions to do that, forms that you need to sign, whatever. I was working with my daughter the other day, and she had a form that she texted me, and I could bring it up on my phone without sending it to my computer or whatever, and I could print it right there, and away we went. So AirPrint is your friend, and I think there's big gap that I think a lot of people were struggling with that is no longer a problem. So
that's awesome. Just brought it up on my phone and there it is. It works for me.
You got a printer that's AirPrint capable.
Apparently I do. Didn't realize it.
And so you've never printed with your iPhone.
Huh? You know, I'm more of a digital girl. It's good to know that you who like paper baloney. So much know how to do that printing thing.
You should be all over this. All right, let's move on to ministry resources.
My ministry resource for this week is a shout out to the Christian Worship Lectionary for Google Calendar. Wow, that's a mouthful. And I'm trying to share my screen at the same time. Not easy. So I don't know how long we've been doing this. I bet it's been 6 or 8 years that we've had a Google Calendar version of the Christian Worship Lectionary. We actually have a page on our Wells Tech Wiki dedicated to teaching you how to use it and help you incorporate it into your own calendar. And so what it gives you is on each of the Sundays of the church here and also special festival days like Ash Wednesday coming up, you can see the lessons, the supplementary lessons, the prayer of the day. It's actually all there, the verse of the day, the hymn of the day, and the seasonal color. So all of that incorporated into your Google Calendar. You can actually add it directly to your church calendar. You can embed it on your website. Just lots of really easy capabilities. And, you know, a lot of times we think, oh, that lectionary stuff, that's for the pastor to deal with. But I know many, many church musicians and choral directors would appreciate having this information in advance on their calendar, easy to look up and structure their worship music around the lectionary readings for the day and theme of the day and things like that. Also, just those lovely altar guild ladies, of which I've been one in the past, who have to keep up with the pyramid changes and things like that. All of that information in one easy place and convenient for those who use Google Calendar. We've also included links to Planning Christian Worship resources online on the Worship Wells Worship website, as well as a printable Year A calendar that comes from Northwestern Publishing House that's a one-page deal with the different readings. I found a couple of old videos I'd done. Everything works the same, but the screens, it's kind of a trip down memory lane. You can see what Google Calendar used to look like and things like that. Put them together in one video, so if you spend 5 minutes, you'll be an expert on using the lectionary for Google Calendar.
And it hasn't changed that much.
It hasn't.
Good ministry resource. Thank you. And keeping with our focus in 2017 on many ministry resources, I have one as well. I wanted to talk about, and I might as well share my screen too with the blog post, and each of our ministry resources always have an associated blog post and sometimes a screen share, some kind of video, and mine is that way as well. Footsteps to the Cross. This is a Lenten pick. Our Lenten ministry resource, and I talk in the blog post about just different ways to kind of freshen up this journey that we make every year to the cross, these 40 days of Lent. And one thing that I really enjoyed a few years back was we had Koine come to our congregation and perform this I'm not sure what you'd call it. It's kind of a mixture of a concert, performance, worship service. Basically, they sing and talk show the way to the cross, and they call it Footsteps to the Cross Illuminated. Really extremely, extremely well done. If you haven't seen it, you really ought to. I put a link here to their 2004 presentation, which was the recorded and put on YouTube. It's not quite the same as being there in person, but just kind of a neat way to experience Lent and get your soul in the right frame of mind, and in some ways very inspired and motivated to follow Jesus to the cross. This one is entitled Footsteps to the Cross, and it goes from, from the Mount of Transfiguration to Mount Calvary. They just do a really nice job. I like their music, and I think there's something there for everybody. You don't have to kind of be a certain age group to, I think, enjoy their music. They're one of those unique bands that has found a niche and you know, this Lutheran worship band has been a blessing to our synod since 2003. So take a look at the blog post and their schedule, because they are touring around southeast Wisconsin. At least I think there's a couple spots in Michigan as well. You've seen Koine, right, Sally? They were up at MLC not too long ago.
Yep, I've seen them in a lot of different settings, including at Camp Phillip once, I believe. So they've been all over. You actually said 2004 video. I think it was from 2014, but it made me wonder how long they've been around. I know it's been quite a while since 2003,
but this, this particular approach is fairly recent. So
okay. Well, I have up on my screen our video of the week, and it also is from Koine, coincidentally. We actually picked those two things separately, but not a problem because they have great music. This is What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And this one I really like because all the words of the song are part of the video. As they're singing it, you're able to sing along. You could use this even in a worship setting if you didn't have a musician for a Sunday, or you were in a camp setting or whatever it may be. You could just use this video to worship with. So good stuff from Koine.
Yep. So this was our community feedback week. We're going to do another one in about 4 weeks. If you want to be a part of that, and we really wish you would, take the opportunity to contribute to the show. We have lots of different ways of doing that. You can go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and leave a comment, as some folks did over the past 4 weeks. You can email us, wellstech@wells.net, or visit any of the social networks of your choice. We're probably there. The only channel maybe that we don't have that's anything worth anything is Snapchat, and I'm going to draw the line there. But Plus, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, Instagram. We have the Wells Google group, et cetera. No excuses if you want to get in touch with us, and we do wish you would. So please do that. Next week, Sally, what are we going
to
do?
Looking forward to having Rachel Feld join us again. She's our newest semi-regular classroom technology correspondent from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Rachel, I believe, is a first and second grade teacher. I might be wrong about that. Brings great insight into education technology. And we are going to dive into the topic of online learning. You know, something I typically think of as more advanced or higher level learning is seeing great strides being made in the lower levels as well. So we'll take a look at how online learning might affect our future. One of the topics from the NMC Horizon Report.
Yep, as we go through that this year. So looking forward to having Rachel join us again. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to having all of you come back and join us for episode 486, creeping up on episode 500. But each and every episode, we try and find stuff that is going to be useful for you and either your professional or personal ministry. So please tune back in again, join us, and bring a friend. Appreciate you being here this week. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.